Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And welcome to a slightly strange episode of Three Bean Salad.
Yeah.
Because it is the first ever episode where we are in the same room together.
I know.
Mad to think that we've never met until this moment.
How weird.
Yeah. Ben's much smaller than I imagined he would be.
Ben's way smaller than I imagined. Yeah. My head, I know people always suffer from this when they first meet me, is much smaller compared to my shoulder width than you'd think it would
than
be.
It should be.
it should be. Or is.
Yeah. And weirdly, Mike is the perfect proportions. He's like, he's the Fibonacci sequence made man.
Yes.
he's the golden ratio.
I'm a spiral human.
Yeah. It's true. Mike is, he's in perfect proportions no matter how far away you are from him.
Yeah. I'm to scale.
You're completely to scale.
It's quite weird, actually, to see someone who's actually that to scale.
Yeah. You're like a one-to-one map of yourself.
It's taken a lot of work.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I wouldn't recommend it.
You've also got a very healthy glow.
Thank you.
Whereas I noticed earlier, I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. I look more pale than a human skeleton.
You look tremblingly pale today.
I don't know why. Yeah. I just sometimes get really pale as... Pale as.
I'm getting a bosun of a ghost ship.
Oh, yeah.
So quite high ranking on the ghost ship.
Oh, yeah. You're up there.
Yeah. It's quite ghost ship. It's quite, I'd have a sort of, some sort of skeletal parrot, sausage dog, and a full sort of skeletal animal companions.
Yeah.
And a skeletal ship.
But you are getting direct skeletal commands from the skeletal captain.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm not top.
You're not decision maker, really.
I'm not decision maker.
You are in a managerial role.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So just to explain what's going on, we are currently on our UK tour.
Oh, yeah.
We are.
And we're not in the tour bus because we don't have a tour bus. We've got Mike's Citroen.
That's right, yeah.
The Bean Whip.
Because, we're supporting Shakira across the UK.
That's right.
Europe.
And it's weird, when you support Shakira... Because she's got such a big entourage, such a big system around her. Mm. We've actually literally not met Shakira once
in the
whole tour.
Or even her people, because they've got people to keep...
No, they're completely... We're sort of a satellite to it, really.
So it's almost as if we're not... It feels almost as if we're weirdly like we're not supporting Shakira.
Yeah. And as a punter, I think that's reflected in the experience of the audience.
Right, because they don't even know that we're supporting Shakira.
We're in a different venue from Shakira.
We're going to completely
at a different time.
Yeah. And country.
Yes.
Yeah. But we are supporting Shakira.
That's it.
That's the underlying facts of it, isn't it? In terms of the paper trail.
So we're on tour. We're currently in a hotel room in Leeds.
Yeah.
We won't give away the hotel brand.
No.
Because I might lightly slag it off.
Yeah, okay. Go for it. Yeah,
I think it's good, actually.
Yeah.
What we noticed is that each room, they've made an effort to try and theme each room.
But a very low effort. So, because basically, no one had noticed. Yesterday, I noticed that the hotel rooms were themed, and neither of you two had even clocked it.
No.
So it's a very, very minimal theme.
Because the rooms are deliberately quite dark, almost as if they're slightly ashamed of their level of theming.
Yeah.
So none of it pops out.
It doesn't pop.
To the eye. But it is there if you look for it. Yours is... Who is that on the wall? I can barely see from here.
So mine is...
There's a Cluedo character.
There's a close-up of one of the cards from Monopoly, is it?
What? Yeah, they've mixed it up because...
It has a street from Leeds.
It's a Leeds version of Monopoly. So my one is games. The theme of my room is games. Mm. So there's a Cluedo character.
There's a spanner, which is one of the Cluedo murder...
Yeah, that's framed. And then there's some Scrabble pieces framed. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. There's a dice-themed poof.
I've got a large square dice-themed poof, which I hadn't even noticed that was dice-themed.
Yeah.
And I think the idea is game, isn't it?
It's ludic.
Ooh, lovely.
Roll the dice.
Yeah.
And sleep is a game, isn't it?
Take your chances.
You might sleep, you might not. That's the game.
Will you wake up?
Buckaroo.
Yeah. Have you got the buckaroo theme?
I've got the buckaroo. A buckaroo bed.
Yeah. So you've got to be very, very careful when you turn
I've
over.
I've got to very careful where I put my saddle when I'm getting into bed.
I've got the pop-up pirate bed.
Oh, okay.
Through the night, members of staff come in, plunge a plastic sword into my side.
Into your barrel.
See if I wake up.
Yeah.
Turns out I do every time.
And of course, I've got a Hungry Hippos themed buffet breakfast, haven't I?
Delicious white plastic balls.
Delicious white plastic balls, which are all coated in a different white sort of flavoured fluid.
Okay. Yeah, tahini.
Tahini. Milk.
Yeah. Meringue.
And liquid meringue,
and white pudding, of course.
White pudding, of course. If you want the full meat version. Mm.
Yeah, so my room is themed, but around dominoes. I think.
Oh, right.
Really? I don't think it's I've got any. Dominoes. Mine is similar to Henry's. I've got a Reverend Green instead of whoever that person is. I still don't know who that is.
Is it Colonel Peacock?
Colonel Peacock.
I'm going to have a look. Hang on. It's Mrs. Peacock.
It's Mrs. Peacock with the spanner.
Yeah.
I never really got into Cluedo.
Cluedo's one of those games where actually if you boil it down, like if you took away all of the
coating.
The coating, which is there's been a murder, there's these people. Mm. It's just a sort of maths game.
But is it even a maths game? So Cluedo's a game which I played as a kid.
Mm.
And you know, like when you're a kid, you don't play the full version of the game. So when I played Monopoly, I'd just be driving a little car around.
Sure.
Yeah. And even when I was playing chess, I'd be like, they'd just be fighting, toys. Then you learn the actual rules of chess and you realize it's not for me.
Right.
So with Cluedo, I had the same thing, which is you're told that you're Professor Peacock or whatever, or you're given the identity.
I think so. Yeah.
And then then there's a weapon and a room and everyone's just ticking them off.
Yeah, it's just mathematical.
But it's not even mathematical. It's listical.
You exclude. It's just the process of excluding.
It's like a logic puzzle, basically.
But it's not even logic, is it? It's like a shopping list. You tick it off, so it has to be that one. There's no deduction. But essentially, what happened with me was, as a kid, I thought, okay, one day I'll learn the real one. And then I think I eventually realised, no, that was it.
But I think there is this wonderful period between being so young that you can't really play the game and then working out that it's just a kind of logic puzzle. There's like a 6-month period in the middle where you're like, I'm a detective. What is it about this colonel that would mean he would kill the terrible Mr. Black? And then somehow you do get into that, but it lasts about maybe 6 weeks even.
Yeah.
And then you realise what it is.
There's no motive, which I think is the missing thing from Cluedo, which I would like. Point, there's no like stories with motive. It's all just mode and opportunity. And I think that motive would make it a bit more interesting, potentially.
Have you ever done, as an adult, one of those dinner parties where it's a murder mystery dinner party and you're meant to go up dressed as a Nazi or whatever? And then
no, but again, I imagine there's a window in your life where you want it, where that's great fun.
Right. And you think you've passed it?
I think I've passed that, yeah. I don't think I'd find that fun anymore. I think there was a time...
I know some friends who did one recently.
Right.
The one person they were all certain wasn't the murderer was someone's teenage daughter who turned up quite late.
Right.
Like, on the day, wasn't even part of the thing. Because they're all quite well pre-organised.
Right.
And then she just was the murderer.
She was.
But they'd assumed that she couldn't possibly be because these things are organised weeks in advance.
That's the kind of thing where I would complain if that happened.
Yeah.
That just feels like that's not fun.
Mm.
And so was that a hotel that had organised it?
Someone's home party, but I think hired in a kind of like, a special bespoke mystery thing.
But also in the same way that Cluedo is basically some set dressing around what is just like a logic problem.
Yeah.
I think with those dinner parties, it's just set dressing around... what is dipping your toe into swinging, isn't it?
Essentially, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I think it's... Yeah, it's... people are there to fuck. Aren't they?
Okay.
I'm assuming that's right. Maybe not with your sort of family-based one. But
what, bringing along their teenage daughter?
I
didn't get the sense that was...
That wouldn't have been on...
Yeah.
Well, that's why she was the murderer. So she had to then be sequestered away into the jail.
While her parents and her parents' friends
went at it like sewing machines.
Yeah.
Okay. Food for thought.
Sorry, back to...
There's some questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I never got... So there's a few things I think I've missed the bus on. I never did. Like, I never really got into paintballing.
I've never done paintballing.
But do you get... that's quite rare to get into it. Most people, like I have done that on a stag. Which I think is the normal level of experience...
I never did paintballing.
Like it's a red letter day. It happens. You've done it. Tick the box.
Was it fun?
It was quite fun, but it's one of those things where the guys who are running it are too serious.
Yeah.
They have to do their health and safety thing.
Yeah.
They're also clearly doing it every single weekend and have convinced themselves on some level that they are basically an army ranger, an elite.
Yeah. Yeah, they should probably be able to go to the Remembrance Day Cenotaph area.
Hold
their head high.
And shoot a paintball up into the air.
Yeah, and they're armed with sort of special sort of weird paintball sort of long guns that they've, cost the same as a flat.
I think those people, when they go to bed at night, they don't rule out the possibility if the army are wiped out, if the navy are wiped out, if ground force are wiped out.
Well, Alan Titchmarsh and Charlie Dimmock.
And if they're all wiped out, if the drones get hacked,
yeah,
what are we left with?
What
paint?
Paint. It's all we'll have.
We'll go straight to B&Q. Secure the ammo.
Yeah.
Because it sort of relies on then if you hit an enemy assailant with some paint, they have to put their arms up and go, yep,
they
okay.
Do have to admit
yes,
it.
It's I'm, very I'm much, out of the
yeah,
war.
Yeah.
It's an honour system.
You're counting on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be wiping it off with a hanky.
No.
So, I mean, if the Chinese army do arrive with, and they have hankies, then yeah. Then even that force is in real trouble.
They've outmaneuvered us again. Because yeah. I've never done it. I kind of wanted to do it quite a lot when I was a teenager. It felt very exciting to me. Mm. And I feel like I've missed the bus as well, because I think the truth of it is that it's just very painful.
It is painful, yeah. If it hits your flesh.
How would you get together that many people unless you're getting married? You'd have to get married in order to right. have the stag do. You know, there comes a point where how are you going to get like 10 of your friends together?
That is why a lot of marriages actually happen.
That is why a lot of marriages actually happen. Yeah. And that's also why the divorce rates are so high, because then you get to do it again.
Yeah. It's numbers, and it's also sort of three-line whip factor, isn't it? It's sort of compulsory or near-compulsory attendance.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas if you're just suggesting, if you're sending an email out to everyone you know saying,
do you want to go paintballing?
Do you want to go paintballing in 7 months' time?
In Salisbury.
When I know you're available.
In Salisbury, yeah.
People will find a reason why they can't go.
But yeah. I think, though, Henry, you can go on your own, and you just turn up, and then it's just like you versus 20 accountants on a bonding
day. You get radicalised, I think, don't you? Isn't that if you turn up on your own?
I'm assuming that's incel. That's incel territory, isn't it? You'll end up falling in with some just odd people, won't you?
Yeah, who sort of doing
the kind of
secret militia training.
Go and do paintball when it's not a wedding.
Yeah,
I mean that's like buying a panettone when it's not Christmas.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous crew. Whoever those people are, I don't.
It's the people who are sort
of
bug-eyedly watching YouTube videos jealously of you know militias training in the woods in North Carolina. That's where they want to be.
That's true,
but they can't recreate that in the Peak District. It doesn't work.
I think the thing I remember people telling me quite proudly, it does hurt though. I think they like that, don't they? Yeah. If you get hit in the face with a paintball, make no mistake, it's going to smart. You've been stung by a bee. Well, imagine half of that. And also, it goes away a lot quicker. And there's less chance of an allergic reaction, so it's much less serious. But I think the fact that it does hurt is a big deal. So the nearest thing I ever did was Quasar.
Yes.
I did do Quasar. Did you guys do Quasar?
Quasar was fun. We had, like, it was one of the few things to do in Portsmouth growing up.
Just to explain for people outside, I think outside of the UK, it's known as Laser Quest.
Laser Quest, right. Same thing, yeah, basically.
So I did Quasar and found it massively disappointing.
Yeah.
I couldn't get the lasers to really work.
Mm.
It wasn't clear if I wasn't good at shooting or if it was just another technical thing in life that wasn't really working well. It was quite stressful.
Yeah, I had a similar thing. I was saying to the guys, like, so how do I make the lasers fire at my eyes? And they were like, that's not how this works. I was like, what?
What, so I'm going to be purely relying on the penis? On the penis cannon? You're not telling me there's no penis cannon. Is this a joke? Yeah. Well, also, there was a bunch of... I was like... I reckon I was like my early 20s, and I just got absolutely massacred by a bunch of 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, that's who it's for, really.
Yeah, that's who it's for.
And I think that's when that was... I think my Laser Quest heyday, there was a period where in the Tricon Centre, which is just a massive, like,
I think we know what the Tricon Centre is. Like. How did it earn its three corns? One, for entertainment. Two, for having a great cafeteria. Yeah.
Three, safety.
An almost impeccable safety record. If you don't count the years 1983 to 97, 1994 to 1995. Now, what was the Tricon Centre?
It's just a massive rectangular multi-story car park.
What? It's not even three-sided.
No, but it's Portsmouth. It's near the Naval Dockyard, so I assume it's named after a sort of hat.
Portsmouth is too, embarrassingly naval-pilled.
Have I not talked about this place before?
Everything has to have a naval sort of moniker on it.
Have I not talked about this place before?
Well, the Tricon Centre, no.
Because it was this massive, like, concrete, like, brutalist structure.
Oh, wow.
That was so dense that the rumour was, because everyone wanted it demolished because it was so ugly. Mm. But the rumour was that the amount of demolition it would expose if it would take to floor it would mean the level of explosion, all of Portsea Island, upon which Portsmouth was sat, would be reduced to nothing but a sheet of glass.
And you could visit what was Portsmouth.
Yeah,
it'd be like a sheet of glass with these like screaming faces.
Exactly.
Squashed into it forever.
Yeah, I thought I'd told you about that. But they have got rid of it now. I think someone just took a sledgehammer to it instead.
Oh, basically. Wow.
Can I say, but it was where, there was a vintage shop where you'd go for like your Guns N' Roses belt buckles.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And there was Laser Quest.
And was that called the poop deck?
Almost certainly.
Everything's got to have a naval moniker.
And that was it, basically.
So you've got the buckle shop, the...
Laser Quest.
Laser Quest.
You can buy a shiny new buckle.
That's the end of the list.
take it to Lacey Crest.
And that's the tri-corner
centre. But it was multi-storey parking.
But multi-storey parking.
Yeah. So wow. Maybe those are the three corners.
I'm trying to remember what the narrative story was. Like, what was the kind of sci-fi... Because was there a kind of, okay, guys, we're in the...
It's 2250.
I don't remember that.
It's 2025.
I didn't even bother with that.
Yeah, the government, yeah. Britain has fallen under the grips of Keir Starmer, an alien from the Blandulon system.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah?
Very nice.
Lovely bit of satire.
Ladies and gentlemen, please pray silence for a moment of satire.
Jonathan Swift.
Holding institutions to account.
Mark Twain.
Speaking truth to power.
Chaucer.
A core part of any healthy democracy.
Chumbawamba.
Can our jokes actually change government policy? Of course they can.
Quiet, please respect this important mode of humour.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
You betcha.
By the way, Ben, what was it like having to... Obviously, having to bring the bean machine into a hotel is...
Well, the hard bit is not showing the staff what I'm bringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to sneak bean under the darkness.
Very, very big chicken.
And because I remember... Because one of the receptionists did ask me if he thought he'd seen something on CCTV, and I just improvised. I said, it's a kind of meat piano. Yeah. And he seemed to be okay with that.
It's cleaning up the trail is the hardest thing,
yeah,
I think.
It's the trail.
Yeah.
So we have to choose hotels without kind of carpets and things in the general areas.
And Dyson don't do a handheld Hoover that can deal with that liquids of that temperature.
No.
And...
Well, they're non-Newtonian liquid.
It's non-Newtonian liquid, isn't it? So a lot of it is liquid, which if the wind's blowing one way, it's a powder. If it's blowing the other way, it's a solid.
Exactly. If you punch it, it punches you back.
It punches you back. And it's a mixture of inorganic and organic stuff, so you can't use the industrial Henry Hoovers. Please don't email us to suggest using the industrial Henry Hoovers.
No, we've tried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we went to the Henry factory and they made us a Mega Henry.
They made us a Mega Henry.
You can't just buy it.
Yeah.
No.
They then lost control of the Mega Henry. And
that's loose in the Wirral.
It's not loose in the Wirral.
Yeah.
Which is why the Wirral's been shut down.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll know about that if you're on the Wirral.
Yeah.
Yeah, or indeed in the Wirral.
Well, we'd have to ask the Mega Henry what the official way to say that is.
But basically, it looks like... So drone footage suggests that the Mega Henry is slowly sucking up the Wirral.
Yeah. Bootle has totally gone.
Completely gone.
Is Bootle on or in the Wirral? Might be.
Well, if it was, it isn't now.
Yeah. That's true. Okay, well, let's turn on the bean machine.
Let's do it.
This week's topic sent in by Mark from Bremen.
Oh, hello,
brackets
Mark.
Near Colliers Wood.
Really?
Where's Colliers Wood?
Next to Tooting.
It's on the Northern Line.
Okay, yeah.
Next stop along from Tooting. It's got a big supermarket. I once went to a big Moss Bros there.
Yeah. I lived there for a year.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's a bit of a no man's land, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Ben, you've never really talked that much about the Tooting years.
No?
You were...
I was Mr. Tooting.
You were Mr. Tooting, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Beck?
Broadway.
Broadway.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. It's a fun name for a place, isn't it? It's very much a place name that you'd think would be in, like, Postman Pat or sort of kids' book.
Well, I watched something recently, like a film or TV show, where they went to Tooting.
Right.
What was it?
Was it CSI Tooting?
No, it was the new Spinal Tap film.
Oh, yeah.
One of the characters lives in Tooting
and
runs a glue shop. Is that right? Or
A sort of history of glue museum or something.
That's right. Wasn't it? Yeah, historical glue shop.
Yeah.
Right. And they say it's in Tooting, Beck. And they've obviously done that because they think it's a funny name.
Right.
But because it's America, they've made it look like a sort of Harry Pottery, old worldy.
Okay.
Which it isn't.
Filmed
at all.
In Kensington or something.
Yeah. It's a really weird decision. But they obviously just thought Tooting, Beck was fun enough. Yeah. Odd decision.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It sounds quaint, doesn't it?
Yeah. But it's not. It's just it's a fox zone. The foxes have taken that area.
Really?
In much the same way that the Mega Henry is laying waste to
the Wirral.
To the Wirral.
Mm.
The fox, the massed fox ranks have...
I think I lived there pre-gentrification, and then Bondwin came in with a gentrification wave and then was driven out by the foxes.
Yeah.
I think you're right, though.
People aren't talking about that post-gentrification wave.
That's the waves, isn't it? It's... It's what do you call it? It's jet...
Gentrification.
It's gentrification, isn't it?
You must have heard of that as a concept.
No, I thought Mike was saying genification.
I do mumble, and I'm aware of that. Occasionally, when I listen back to the podcast, I can barely hear what I'm saying.
It's a
long-term back apology to the listeners there, because I have always been a mumbler.
Yeah, so gentrification in London, is, I guess, so what the pattern is, you have a sort of quite a rundown sort of...
Yeah.
Maybe post-industrial sort of zone. Then Gail's cafes come in.
It becomes affordable.
Yeah.
And then you get classy things coming in.
The prams get larger.
The prams get larger and sleeker.
The croissants become crispier on the outside and softer on the inside. Yes. So there's two different directions of moisture happening in the croissants.
That's correct. Yeah.
The pubs develop.
Sort of whimsical taxidermy.
Whimsical taxidermy. Yeah. There'll be a lot of badger heads and stuff
quizzes. Pub quizzes become increasingly inaccessible.
That's right.
It'll be sort of French New Wave cinema.
There's bigger and bigger Scandinavian novel section.
Yes.
In the pub quizzes.
Yeah.
Things like proper Scotch eggs, don't you? You get these like...
Yeah. But for me, a proper Scotch egg is like one that tastes slightly of plastic that you buy from a Sainsbury's for 40p, you know?
Yeah.
That's a proper Scotch egg.
Mm. Yeah. Where the egg's been boiled in a different country from where the meat was slaughtered. And the breadcrumbs come from somewhere else.
And the whole lot was packaged somewhere else.
And they've had to put meat in inverted commas on the packet.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. In those pubs, they'll have kind of artisanal...
Like these beautiful textured, sort of like so many different colours of those russet colours in the breadcrumb.
Yeah.
And then you bite through the sausage and then the egg has been poached.
It's a poached dove's egg.
It's a poached dove's egg.
Encased in the flesh of freshly hunted stag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes they boiled it to that point, you know, where
kind of jammy.
Jammy, that's the word that's used. Jammy yolk. Yeah. Anyway, that gentrification, that happens, and then it's the foxes.
Yeah.
Because you've got more and more organic food waste lying around.
Exactly.
Bigger and bigger gardens.
Everyone stinks of eggs.
Everyone stinks of eggs, and the foxes just swarm in. And also, everyone's too bloody woke these days to do what you should do when you see a fox, which is shoot it in the head and then run it over. Isn't it? That's the kind thing to do, but no one's doing
that. The gentrifying classes
will not do that.
Until the really posh people move in, and then there's the horseback.
Then they'll absolutely wreck those foxes. Then they return it to arable farming, and they bring in their sort of serfs back in to till the land.
It's a circle of life.
And then it's a circle of life.
But then, with all those foxes being hunted, you get more whimsical taxidermy, you start putting them up in the pub, gentrifiers come back.
Whole thing. So the whole it's multifactorial.
It's exhausting.
It's absolutely knackering.
Yeah.
But it's Britain.
Yeah. But it is Britain. So do stuff a peacock, put a monocle on one of its eyes.
Yeah. Perfect.
Stick it up on the...
Yeah, so we're not in Tooting, so we don't know what phase Mark is in. I haven't been to Tooting for a number of years.
He's in Colliswood. Yeah, when I was living there, it was gentrifying fast and hard.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's probably gone even further since I left.
Okay.
Because I left at the moment they were building a rooftop cocktail bar.
Blimey.
Oh, that's such a... Peckham is full of those. Yeah.
Blimey. When I first moved there were a couple of really good curry houses and a few RA pubs, and that was about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope to God the curry houses are still there, because they are absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. And I hope they haven't tried to, like, you know, beautify them.
Old school curry house.
Jaffna House. Sweet Jaffna House. Anyway, this week's topic.
Quite tired now. Also, we're doing this. I'm looking at a huge, comfy double bed.
Yeah, that is
while recording.
It doesn't help at all.
Because we're in my hotel room.
Also, can I just say, Henry?
Yeah.
Refreshing lack of sort of fecal and body odor fug in here. Well done.
Thanks very much.
I was just worried we were going to be in the fug zone, but...
Do you know why that is?
Why?
You've been using Ben's room.
I've been using your room.
As I sleep.
Yeah, as you sleep. I've been using you as a duvet. As a kind of billionaire's duvet.
With a B-day corner.
Yeah. Because we popped out for breakfast earlier, didn't we?
We did.
Mm.
And because I knew it was going to be a working room today, I did ask the staff if they could do the room.
Did you?
Yeah. Because I didn't get it done yesterday.
Okay, fair enough.
Mm.
But I thought today for us, so they've done a nice job of it.
They have.
So a big shout out to, we're not going to name the hotel, in Leeds.
Yeah. Okay, this week's topic, as sent in by Mark from
Colliswood.
Colliswood.
Near Colliswood.
Yeah.
So it could be Morden.
Ben, am I right in thinking you used to live in Tooting?
Yes, Tooting, which is next to Colliswood. Yeah.
It's got a funny, sweet name, hasn't it, Tooting?
I mean, Mike actually lived in Colliswood. We didn't ask him anything about
Colliswood. No. What is a collier?
A collier as in like a coal person.
A coal miner. Right, so Colliswood.
Yeah. Any fond memories of Collieswood?
It's a bit of a blur, really. This is early university phases.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So chaotic times.
Mike was one of those people, I imagine, in those days of sort of drinking games. He could take an entire pint of lager and put it directly into his stomach through his mouth.
Including the glass.
Put it in.
One of your oldest friends would suck it out your ass, and then got a special tie to wear.
And then you'd all set fire to each other's legs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what made Britain great.
Anyway,
right, come on.
This week's topic, as sent in by Mark from near Collierswood. Ever been to Collierswood?
It's southwest London, isn't it?
It might even be SW19. I think it shares a postcode with Wimbledon. Thank you.
So it's ever diminishing southwest London chat.
Every time we go around.
Every time we return to that well.
Anyway, come on. This week's topic, as sent in by.
Don't say where he's from.
Mark from.
London.
Near Collierswood.
No.
Come on.
There's a Wimpy in Morden.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that one of those where you still get a knife and fork and a plate?
Oh, yeah. It's good.
That's the only burger joint my late Welsh grandma would take us to because of the cutlery.
Decorous.
Yeah.
Wimpy was in the mix. There was, there was a point where there was McDonald's, Burger King, Wimpy, Spudgy-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Paul's Crackers.
So is that Paul's Crackers or Paul's Crackers?
His name was Paul Crackers and he sold crackers.
Paul Crackers hot crackers.
Yeah. You know what I realised the other day? In fact, it was in Leeds, I think. I walked past a Burger King and I was like, bloody hell, McDonald's has won.
Trounced it.
Because I felt like they were neck and neck at a point when I was growing up, Burger King and McDonald's. It was which is your favourite? And that's not even a conversation now.
No, you're right.
Is it not?
No.
We moved on.
I always think about how depressing it must be to work at Burger King head office. Because you know you're second best and you're not going to win.
And the irony of the name.
Yes.
You are not the Burger King. That's the horrible irony. You are not the Burger King.
It's a good point. You're the Burger Knave.
You're the Burger Knave. Yeah. It's about a rebrand.
Yeah.
All stand for the King. Entering the Regal Zone. Off with their heads. On with the show.
Listen not to the knaves and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The Regal Zone.
Maybe it's a sort of burger constitutional monarch. Maybe there's McDonald's is the Prime Minister of burgers.
So Burger King is just sort of
ceremonial.
A figurehead.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it must be the same if you work in Pepsi headquarters as well. You're just like...
That was ever that.
We're doing
though.
Fine, but that was ever we're this. Never actually going to win.
But the thing is, Coca-Cola is so successful that to be the second best to Coca-Cola is still massive. It's still like this is... It's still making... They're bringing in some dollar, Ben. Okay, I hate to break it to you, but they're doing all right.
I know, but...
Pepsi.
They know that. They're sitting in their gilded... And also, it's going, but we're not the best.
And also, they're called Pepsi Max. They're not Pepsi Max in a way. They're not the Max. It's true that you go into a place and you say, can I have some Coca-Cola? And they go, is it okay if you have some Pepsi Max?
It's always apologetic. They never just say, it is Pepsi.
Yeah. But you never go to a
I've
place...
I've got great news. We don't have that, but we do have. Yeah,
you know what? You've just won the bloody lottery, mate, because you're getting a free upgrade to Pepsi Max. Yeah, because it's never. You never say, "Can I have a pint of Pepsi, please?" And okay, I'm sorry, but do you mind? Is it okay if it's just Coca-Cola? That's not ever never happened, has it?
Pepsi should change its name to "Is Pepsi All Right?"
Can I have a pint of? No. Can I have? It should be. It should be. No, it should be. Rename itself to Pepsi Is All Right. Fine, thanks, mate. Yeah, whatever. It should be called. Yeah, whatever. Can I have a pint of? Can I have a pint of? Yeah, whatever. It's Pepsi. Right? I just said. Yeah, whatever.
I was reading about this the other day. So in taste tests, people prefer Pepsi. That's the thing that Pepsi always say.
Okay.
So, and apparently it's true. If you give people a little sip of drink and you say, which of these two do you prefer? Pepsi's always the answer.
Is that right?
However, if you make them drink a whole glass of both, they prefer Coca-Cola.
Why is that? What?
So Pepsi's nicer for the first sip.
And of course, this was the Pepsi challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole thing, right? You sipped.
Yeah. So apparently... first sip wise, Pepsi wins, but for full drink wise, Coke wins.
So in other words, you marry Coke, but you have an affair with Pepsi.
That's right.
Okay. So Pepsi's a bit of fun on the side, sort of thing, but actually for commitment.
Yeah.
Well, well.
Anyway, this week's topic.
sent in by
Mark from Nia.
No!
Collier's Wood.
Is Antarctica.
Oh. Okay. Oh. So we have discussed the Arctic.
In the past.
In the but we've, deep we've past.
We've talked about
Antarctica.
We've
not done the other end, have we?
No, but Arctic was the topic name for a topic. Yeah. But we have talked about Antarctica in the past.
Okay.
Because I remember that. We came up with a mnemonic for remembering which one's which has worked for me.
Okay.
Which is Antarctica, ant. Mm. Ants carry something. So you picture the ant carrying the world. Mm-hmm. So it's the one at the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never forgotten Antarctica and what is since that. I
mean, because of that.
Yeah.
Mm. That's good.
That was sent in by a listener, wasn't it? But have you been able to remember which one is...
I don't know which one the Arctic is. I know Antarctica is the one on the bottom. I need a separate...
can you remember which one is the penguins, which one is the polar bears?
Oh.
Again, the clue is in the name for the classically educated.
Antarcticus, Antarcticar, Antarcticarus is to go to bear, isn't it?
I thought you were trying to summon something then. Suddenly a penguin would appear.
Summon a memory.
please explain.
Well, Arctic as in bear.
Does Arctic mean bear?
Yeah.
Hang on, Mike. How does Arctic mean bear?
Isn't like Arctus or something like that the word for?
Ursus is bear, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the Greek, though.
Oh.
That's the last.
Touché, touché.
Touché.
So what, Arctic means bear land or something?
I think so.
But how did the Greeks wouldn't have known that there were bears there?
That's the most ridiculous point you've ever made.
Well, that's a high bar. So the Antarctic, right? Now, as we've discussed many times on this podcast, opposites are actually quite similar.
Yes.
Aren't they?
Yeah, because the Arctic and the Antarctic...
They're opposites, but they're quite similar.
They're more similar to each other than like the Arctic is to Leeds, for example.
Or Brendan Gleeson.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I think I'm going to legitimately... I'd like to discuss the Arctic quickly, which is very similar to the Antarctic. Through the lens of the Antarctic.
Okay.
Because I'm currently reading a book about the Arctic. I'm just going to grab my Kindle.
Oh.
Okay. And discuss it with you. So hang on, it's on the bed. So it's a non-fiction book. So basically... At night, when I'm in bed, I like to read about people that are very, very chilly and having a very bad time.
Right.
In a very, very cold context.
Okay.
Because it makes me feel warm and snug and nice in bed.
Right.
So, and the thing about the Kindle, which is a bit dangerous, is that you can impulse buy. Whereas in the past, you'd have to go, I want to read a book about the Arctic. I'll write a note to myself and tomorrow I'll go down. I'll write one. Whereas now you can just crack off and buy one in the middle of the...
worth a rephrase.
That's worth a rephrase, isn't it? If I still want to buy it after cracking off, I'll know that I'm committed to the idea.
Cracking off period is recommended with this book.
we strongly recommend a crack off before. So it was a couple of weeks ago. It was the middle of the night. I'd woke up in the middle of the night. I couldn't go back to sleep. And I thought, I need to read a book about someone really chilly. So I've read that book, the TV show The Terror was based on, which I think is called The Terror. I've read that book about them trying to find the Northeast Passage. They get incredibly chilly. They have a terrible time. It's brilliant for reading in bed. Mm. I've read ones about Everest, exploration.
Oh, have you read that one? If you haven't read it, it's a good one. The plane that crashes in...
The Andes?
With the Uruguayan rugby team on it.
Oh, that.
I've seen the film Alive. Oh, I don't think I have read the book.
The book is really good.
Yeah, the other one I've read is Touching the Void is really good. I'm just into people who are having a terrible, terrible time and really
cold environments.
In a cold environment. But I've started to get through these books.
So the worst possible book. It's people having a good time in a tropical environment.
Yeah, or a beach romance.
Yeah.
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 My Great Fun's Hot Summer Nights.
Yeah.
For example, by Beryl.
Mills and Boone's.
By Beryl.
Mills and Boone's Cypress Sweatfuck series.
Yeah. The Cypress Sweatfuck. I hate all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So anything that's hot and sexy and set in a volcano. For example.
My Etna Stallion.
My Etna Stallion. My smoking hot affair with Beelzebub. that sort of thing.
Alla Vesuvio.
Alla Vesuvio.
What's this one called?
So it was the middle of the night, yeah. And I searched Arctic, mm-hmm. whatever, and on my Kindle. So I came up with Shackleton sort of stuff.
Okay.
So Shackleton, I hadn't dipped into Shackleton really. Mm-hmm. So Shackleton, what did he do?
You're reading the book about him.
Yeah.
No. it's in one ear, one out, and one eye out, the other eye with me.
I think Shackleton is the South Pole, and he got stuck and had to go back and left the ship in the ice, and then somebody went back, and then they came back to rescue them. Is that Shackleton?
I think that's right, yeah.
But they were... and been, was that the one where the Norwegian guy got there first?
That's
Hall & Oates.
That's Hall & Oates.
Yeah, that's...
You're making my dream come true. No, who was that?
That is...
Amundsen was the Norwegian guy.
Yes, that is Oates, and...
He's got to the Antarctic.
I presume.
Dr. Livingstone.
That's hot. I don't like that. That's the Congo. Yeah, that's not good for me. I don't want that at all.
But we should look up who this is.
This is terrible. We should know.
He died in a tent.
That's Captain Oates.
That's Oates and...
But that's Scott of the Antarctic,
Scott,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Amundsen got there first, and Scott got there second and died.
Well, did Scott even get there?
Yeah, we don't know.
So he's the Pepsi of...
yeah.
Of Antarctic explorers. All I know is I Shackleton. I thought
Ernie.
I'm going to do some Shackleton stuff. I found a book.
So he's Antarctic again, Ernie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So we are on Antarctic at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I put in that Shackleton. I think I put into. So I was multi-screening. It was the middle of the night. I'm multi-screening, trying to help myself get back to sleep. I'm going onto my phone. Mm. I'm googling like what the top 10 books that are set in a cold, chilly place.
You're also watching Sex and the City.
Watching Sex and the Season
2. Alaska
season,
edition.
Season 4. Alaska edition.
Ice Road Sex.
I'm also buying and selling Bitcoin. So I found this book. I started reading it, so in the middle of the night. It starts, during the Antarctic summer of 1957-58, a British expedition led by Vivian Fuchs completed the first crossing of Antarctica. The journey covered 2,158 miles and took 99 days. The same goals won by Fuchs were sought and lost more than 40 years previously by Ernest Shackleton. The odds against a crossing the continent in 1914 were staggering. Shackleton had no airplane, no reliable radio, no radar. Anyway, I started reading it, and... this weird thing happened where...
Ernest Shackleton appeared.
In bed next to me.
It's Sarah Jessica Parker.
And he was like, I'm chilly, but she's hot.
Together we're going to get you just right.
Just right, baby. And basically those are two drama graduates who I've hired, and they come around and do it every night now. And it helps me get off to sleep.
Great.
Basically, this weird thing happened. It's about 10 pages in. So it's the middle of the night. So we're probably 3 a.m. or something. And I'm like, 10 pages. I'm like, there's something about this that's shit. I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
Chapter 1, Southward. 1,100 miles east of Sailor's Graveyard of Cape Horn in the South Atlantic, at the tip of South America, lies the small mountainous snow-covered island of South Georgia. It's called the Gateway to... Anyway, there's something... I can't put my finger on it. There's something about this that's shit.
So I think I know what this might be.
Yeah.
There's two options.
Okay.
It's written by Ben Fogel.
and is that true? Or is ben he using Fogel, one of his pen names?
Ben Fogel, who I allegedly look like, according to someone who lives near me.
Yeah.
Or
is it an AI book?
It's an AI book.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, is it really?
Yeah.
That wouldn't have even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Because it's very facty-facty, isn't it? There's no special sauce in there. It's just facty-facty-facty.
It's facty-facty, but there were bits that were kind of okay. So when the door opened, the frown of concentration left his face and was replaced by a wide, disarming grin. It's not...
Who are they claiming wrote it?
Well, I'll come to that in a second.
Or are we saying that Ben Fogel is AI?
Well, I think Ben Fogel is essentially at the moment there are two forces that are going to define the next 20 years of human civilization. Isn't it? On the one hand, it's AI. On the other hand,
it's BF.
It's BF. Because I've got the app now, and you can ask Ben Fogel any question, and I'll come up with a kind of okay answer. It's not always
bad. It's workable.
It depends on what he's doing. It might take 3 or 4 hours to get back to you. He's got the kids or whatever. You know.
He's got kids. He's quite busy. But But I've invested a lot in BF, so I'm hoping.
So how quickly did you realize something was up?
It was really odd because there are sentences like that which are kind of okay. Charts were unrolled and the talk began. The calloused forefinger of a Norwegian whaler pointed towards the South Sandwich Island group. The man spoke quickly in Norwegian. Saul translated. The words brought a frown to Shackleton's face. It's not terrible. It's kind of like, it's got these moments that have some texture to them like that. But just, I tell you what happened was.
So have they just been nicked off someone else's book, basically?
I think that's how I think that's how Fogel works.
Yeah.
If you ask Fogel to write you a book about the Antarctic, he'll read a thousand books,
and again, probably one book that's got nothing to do with it by mistake.
Will end up
in the mix.
And again, you've got to factor in he does have young children, so he's up to his school pickups.
There will be a recipe for macaroni cheese in there.
And the script from K-pop Demon Hunters.
But I tell you what it was. It starts to dawn on me, like maybe 15 to 20 pages in. It doesn't have an angle. That was the thing. There's no angle on this. It's fine and it's okay. But the problem with the book just was so weird. It was just this lack of angle. It just didn't have a kind of a sentient viewpoint on it, on the story.
It was just the facts in the
room. And it was like,
and even that starts to peter out, does it, after a bit? What do they do? They just sort of tag a Ruth Rendell on the end to pad it out.
Stick some recipes in the middle. No, I assume it continues and it completes what it's intending to do. But, you know, weirdly, it's oddly a bit like what we were talking about earlier with like, McDonald's, Burger King, or like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and there'll be things on, you know, Panda Cola.
This doesn't need to be the best.
It doesn't need to be. Yeah, there are good.
We can make this cheaply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it can just be what.
Someone is writing really good books about Arctic and Antarctic explorers. Yeah.
We can read
like
those.
It. Someone wants to read those books. Yeah. They'll have read all the good ones.
Yeah. And also, there'll be some tosser in the middle of the night.
Exactly.
Who just randomly.
There'll be just enough tossers in the middle of the night to make this financially viable. Yeah.
But because, as you say, it has cost them probably zero to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're straight into profit. So even if...
No one's organising a book tour for this, are they?
No.
Or printing hard copies.
But what's really terrifying about this... Sorry to sound like...
Yeah.
Let's be serious about this. But this is going to happen with podcasts, apparently. I was reading a thing about this where in the next year or so, if you look for a podcast about something, you'll have to wade through 99,000 podcasts that have been made by AI before you find one that's made by a real person.
Yeah.
Which will be a massive actual problem that will have to be dealt with.
So like Football Weekly with Garu Lineke, whatever. And you're like, where's Lineke? And then they're Garun Linekon. There'd be 10,000 of them you have to wade through. You're like, fuck it, I'm just going to go with Garan Lineken.
actually,
you know what?
Garan Lineken's pretty good.
Garan Lineken's really good.
And Ulan Shoro.
Which is how Roy Stewart actually says Alan Shearer. but in a way, that's what happened with me. In the middle of the night, I wanted a book about Shackleton Arctic Exploring, and I Googled it, and the first thing, you know, I would have had to wade through to get to the real one.
You didn't have 4 hours to spend working out whether or not this was a bona fide writer
By the way, I'm heavily aware of the fact that I could just be really slamming an actual author. But
you haven't checked this out?
Well, I haven't checked it out. But I'm convinced it's AI, but I might not be, in which case it's a huge slam on this bloke. But maybe we can try and research it and work it out now. So I... So it's called
Book Title and Author Anonymized.
I don't think there's any evidence of it as a real book. See what you think. That's that's the book.
Okay.
What's it saying? We're on Amazon here looking at it.
Henry.
Yeah.
It might be a real.
It was published in 2015, kind of before AI was a thing.
Oh God.
Yeah, he's a
no.
He's a real historian.
He's a real man.
Are you sure? So anyways, in the middle of the night, I became convinced this book was AI, so I bought another one about Shackleton called something else similar by a guy called Frank Worsley. He was on the expedition, so I thought it's got to be legit. But then I'd sort of started second guessing myself, thinking, He was on the expedition, but I mean, was how do I know he was paying attention that much? He suddenly got really like in my head about the authenticity
you
of what
asked
I was
yourself,
reading.
Would you be paying attention if necessarily?
It was me. I mean, I might have been on that expedition. Yeah. Before, it's hard for me to know what expeditions I've been on or not been on because I don't keep records. No, but I genuinely started to think, oh, hang on, various people were on this expedition. Mm. Various people wrote books about it. How do I know which is the best one? You know, you get stuck Googling which is the best.
Not everyone's going to have an interesting take on it.
No. Some of them people will be cynically thinking, I was on this expedition.
Someone might be really good at like dead reckoning navigation, but not necessarily very good
at
prose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sweet talking a polar bear down.
That's the person you want.
Yeah. That might be the one you want. But
and directing them back
but
to
anyway,
the
but I was reading his writing and I was like, hang on, is he a good writer? He was on the expedition. I mean, the other book, that guy doesn't even exist.
Possibly.
Possibly. If he does, apologies to him and his very real family. Whereas this guy, I thought, he's on the expedition, but is he a good writer? And I was reading it, I was actually going, I think at one point he went something like, it was so noisy outside the boat, it was like a huge train was going past. I thought, hang on a minute, this guy's like, he was there, but he's not a good writer. Whereas the other guy
but
doesn't
that...
exist, maybe.
But is that fair? Because that might have been the first time anyone's described something like that. Trains aren't that old at that point, do you know what I mean? It might have been quite a novel way of...
That's true.
People might have been reading, like, what an interesting idea. Train.
Ooh, wow, that's really brought it to life.
I suppose I've heard they are noisy.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've been on a train, so it was making it less exciting, the whole thing. Whereas actually at the time, trains would have been quite exciting.
Yeah,
it shows that, you know, not all metaphors age that well.
Well, exactly. Whereas you might write that it sounded like there was maybe a drone had gone past.
Sound like
a,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it sounded like the whir of a bubble tea machine.
Yeah. Maybe we need to actually go back and update the metaphors on old writing.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
My love is like a red power button on a...
on the side of a Corby trouser press.
Like we're updating the metaphor. Would a Corby trouser press by any other name smell as sweet?
So I gave up on that one as well.
Okay. Mm. How much money are you deep into this thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's weird on...
Because they're all like 90p or something.
Yeah, but I think the one that I thought was AI was like £7. And then the legitimate one I thought was 79p or something.
Right.
Anyway, so I then thought, you know what? Sod this. I'm going to go to the other side of the globe altogether. I'm going to look for an art. I'm going to clean slate.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for an Arctic expedition. So I then found this book called In the Kingdom of Ice.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
The Frozen Novelization.
With prose versions of all the songs. It's called In the Kingdom of Ice by Hampton Sides.
So how are you spelling Sides?
I can't read the name of the surname of the author because it's under a bar showing me what percentage of the way through the book I am. So he's currently called Hampton 28%.
It's a great pen name.
It's a great name. And it's something like the subtitle is loads of people having a really, really hard time of it in a very cold environment. Effectively. Can you read that from the I can't read that.
So, In the Kingdom of Ice, the grand and terrible polar voyage of the USS Jeannette.
Yes.
Mm.
So, okay. So this one, by this point, it's like, you know, like 4:15. I've been struggling with huge concepts about the future of technology and writing and stuff. And I just want to read a book about some cold people and go to sleep.
Yeah.
So finally, I download this one. And so this is about a doomed Arctic, you know, it's great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I start reading it. And it's like, historical context of the time. The guy who funded the mission. And I'm not joking. At one point, I went to the next chapter and it started, but what about the person who funded the mission's father? I'm 28% through this book and no one is cold. Still no one is cold. I haven't slept a wink. It's so factual. It's just like, so this is something I'm only dipping into recently, I think. Mm. I think it's a classic middle-aged thing, which is, I've got less and less truck with fiction. I just want cold, hard, well, literally cold. Yeah. I want hard facts. More and more I'm drawn to
the
non-fiction
these days, but I am massively loving the trend for people writing that really well and in an exciting way.
Like what kind of things that?
Like that Killing Thatcher book that Ellis put me on to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as in Elton John.
Yeah.
Yep.
Listen in, guys. And recently read that Ben McIntyre one about Oleg Gordievsky. That again was like written by like a kind of thriller.
Who's that?
Who's this KGB agent and British spy, Cold War. So it's a fascinating story anyway.
It's cold, so you've got me. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested. Keep talking.
It's just so well written. And it just happens to be a real-life story that plays out with genuine drama.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way he's written it is... It's a proper page turner.
Oh, that's good.
Have you read In Cold Blood by Truman Capote?
No.
I think I might be wrong, but I think that's the first one of those, basically.
Okay,
that was
okay.
His thing.
But I also I think it's incredibly hard work and really, really boring.
No, it's fantastic.
Is it? Have you read it?
Yeah, okay. It's a real page turner.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
And I think he was the first guy to go...
Oh, and Cold Blood.
Indeed. It's the perfect thing for you. Although I think it's in Oklahoma or somewhere. So
it's actually quite hot.
Right. Yeah. And similarly, that Northern Ireland thing that you recommended, the series.
Say Nothing.
Yeah, which I haven't seen, but I've read the book of it. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right there. I've not read a novel for quite a long
time. I don't
time.
Like it, because it's something about fact. I'm being drawn to fact. But there is a kind of middle-aged dad vibe to Hampton 28%.
Yes.
I think any naval sort of book is going to be.
Yeah, you're right. It's naval facts. But he's done so much research. Like, it's too many facts. You don't need this much research.
Right.
Like, there's huge lists. So I'm struggling through it, but no one's... But I've got this thing about...
Can you not skip ahead?
I've got that thing I don't want to skip. I want
really?
To be alive. But he's getting so much
background.
Maybe
you need to go chilly fiction. I'm still reading novels, but although I'm not testing myself with novels.
Yeah, no, be, yeah.
Maybe you just need a chilly...
Maybe need a chilly... Dr. Zhivago?
Well, there's lots of novels are set in chilly places because it's a nice... just makes everything a bit harder. It's another layer of jeopardy, right? Same reason lots of the ends of novels happen in storms. You know, you've got people like windswept stories.
Well, on the topic of that, are we going to go to the moors this afternoon?
No.
Oh.
We might go to the Armouries Museum.
Oh, we're going to the Armouries Museum. I want to get onto those Yorkshire moors.
Okay.
And feel the wind going through my...
Follicles?
Well, we've got a drive to Manchester tomorrow. I could take you to the Peak District.
Yeah, we can stop off on the way.
Top end of the north end of the Peak District.
Because maybe really I need to be reading the Brontes.
Yeah.
Heathcliff, it's me,
In fact, you know what? Wuthering Heights. Weirdly, I think this is how I remember most stuff is to do with the chilliness.
Yeah, Wuthering Heights is quite...
Because Wuthering Heights is chilly. And also, I remember there's a description in it of how thick the walls of the cottage are.
Mm.
And that, to me, that's what I'm into. Cold outside, thick walls.
Yeah, really dark, gloomy, people surrounded by bogs. There's no other houses for 12 miles.
Exactly, and then being all cosy and okay inside.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Hit up the Brontes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And dear, sweet listeners, if you have any... hot recommendations for Henry.
For chilly books.
Yeah, chilly books.
Fix us
any up. Hot chilly takes.
Hot chilly takes.
For Henry's book club.
Yeah. That'll be good.
Time to read your emails.
You bet.
Mama.
When you send an email... must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
This is from Owen on the topic of Ben's film festival rejection.
Okay.
Dear Beans,
Listening
to the latest podcast while driving home from work in Cambridge to my provincial dad house in the suburbs, I was chuckling along when the podcast was interrupted by the news that Ben's short film had been rejected by a film festival.
Mm.
Normally this wouldn't be noteworthy, except I was driving home from my job at the Cambridge Film Festival.
Oh, good heavens.
Oh, no.
Was that the very festival?
Yes, and I knew that only a couple of days earlier we had sent out our rejection emails to submitting filmmakers. It couldn't be, could it? It was nagging away at me until I got home, as although programming is not my job, brackets I do marketing, I had actually drafted the rejection email, so I felt terrible that I may have been involved in rejecting a bean.
Oh, Owen.
Oh. On arriving...
So what's wrong with a bit of old-fashioned corruption every now and then? Surely he could have...
I'm hoping that's where this email goes.
Okay.
On arriving home, I fired up the laptop to check, and sure enough, Mr. Partridge had indeed submitted his film to our festival and had sadly not been selected. As a listener, I would never have knowingly let this happen. And had I known Ben's film had been submitted, I would have used my propensity for corruption.
You could have put your money where your mouth is corruption-wise, though, isn't it?
This is too little too late, Owen.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that your heart was in the right place and you were up for some corruption.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not helping us, is it?
You're never going to make it big in the film festival marketing world if you can't press that corruption button. Yeah.
Was it a nice rejection email? Or how was it worded?
Good question.
Because, you know... Obviously, yes. We've all received different rejection emails and letters in our lives as part of life.
I had one today.
Yeah. I'm just not interested in I'm going on a cruise with you, Ben.
Okay.
But it's a technique, isn't it, that you learn to scan. You don't read from the beginning. If you go to the middle word, normally like physically the middle. What's the middle word like on the page?
Okay, the middle word is challenging.
So you're screwed.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah. So this is the email.
No way you've got the
that I guess was written by Owen. Dear Benjamin, we hope this message finds you well. Bad start. Already.
Why are you playing for time? What are you?
just get to the point.
Just say it.
First and foremost, we want to express our sincere gratitude to you for submitting Daddy Superior to the Cambridge Film Festival.
It's shot across the bows after shot across the bows, isn't
it? Yeah, it's pretty obvious what's going on.
Because it would be mad for it to then say, and also...
You've been accepted.
But we're so excited to thank you first, ask you how you are, thank you, and then accept you. Mm. Yeah.
We truly enjoyed the opportunity to watch your work and appreciate the effort, creativity, and passion.
Just kill me. You've got the dagger in my neck. Punch it through.
Okay, here it comes, Henry.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it has not been selected for our programme this year.
See, I take issue with that as well.
What, the really? Unfortunately?
No, I understand Owen was indeed the author of this. But I think writing it either in the passive or giving the verb to the film, unfortunately, it has not been selected.
We have not selected it. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
But that, yeah, good point.
Just tie your colours to your mast. Dear Ben, we didn't choose it. Soz.
Don't even say soz.
Better luck next time, you know.
Dear Worm, no. Yeah.
Laughing emoji. Turd emoji. Rat emoji.
Puking up emoji. Turd emoji. The one that's been adapted to not be smiling. Crying turd emoji.
Office full of co-workers sharing shit film and laughing at it emoji.
Yeah.
The what was he thinking emoji.
Yeah.
The bonfire of his savings emoji.
And the rarely used one, which is dead Santa who's died by falling onto his own sleigh. Emoji. Yeah, I was going to say the thing that Mike said about this probably might not be appropriate, but the thing Mike said about the way
passivizing it.
Yeah, yeah, making the verb passive. That reminds me of Peter Mandelson's statement he made about. I've said it and I'll say it again. I deeply regret being introduced to Jeffrey Epstein. I've always regretted being introduced.
It's
completely pathetic. He just was party to.
Yeah.
Good point. Anyway, actually, to be fair, I think this email is perfectly professional and fine.
Yeah.
And I like this sentence, though. Please know that no decision is made lightly.
So we really, really...
We really don't want this.
We really, really don't want this.
We thought about it hard. It was unanimous.
Yeah. Some consolation to that. Because actually, the nicer way to think, the nicest thing to hear would be, we really had to make the decision really quick.
We've half-assed.
A lot of us weren't concentrating.
Yeah.
Deborah wasn't in, and she's the only one who really knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
Actually, what would be the perfect... I think the perfect rejection email would be, dear Benjamin, it's all politics.
Yeah.
You never stood a bloody chance because the system's rigged against you. The fact is, it's too original for these times, yes, where everything has to be focus grouped, yeah, and decisions are made by executives who are completely out of touch with the country anyway.
Yeah.
It should be that sort of thing.
Very good.
You're too good for these times, so we couldn't give you the award.
I feel good about this now.
Yeah.
Dear Ben, true genius is never recognised in its own time or its hometown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Owen.
And our current estimate is this film will be successful 200 to 300 years after your death. So perhaps think about freezing yourself. Imagine if you froze yourself for 200 years, woke up.
Submitted it to a film festival. Got rejected. Because Owen's also frozen himself.
It's in the wrong aspect ratio.
Also, everyone's just like floating jellyfish people now. We don't really watch films.
All they watch is film adaptations of the book.
Book title and author anonymized.
Thanks for having new signed up on our Patreon.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Patreon.com/threebeansalad. There are various tiers you can sign up for. You can get bonus episodes. You can get video episodes. We do episodes when we're not putting out normal episodes during the month. We're off. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge.
You certainly
And we were
do.
Actually all there last night because obviously we're all on tour.
Yeah.
So Mike brought the mobile Bean Lounge with him.
He did.
Because it follows Mike around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big one, wasn't it?
Well, it was all hands on deck.
Well, it was hard work, wasn't it? Because we were making the mobile Sean Bean Lounge completely seaworthy.
That's right.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Which
Thank
is
you.
A lot harder than it sounded.
Yeah.
And here's my report.
We were making the mobile Sean Bean Lounge completely seaworthy in Leeds last night because you cannot be too careful. To ensure safety protocols were in place, Dune threw Graham, Ian Hawkins, James Legg and Kevin Solis overboard onto the A61. Lucy reached for the life belt, only to find it was a hyper-realistic cake prepared in advance by Matt the after-turner-turner for a game of emergency equipment or cake to take place in the officer's mess that evening, alongside a cheesecake defibrillator made by M-Bop and a Battenberg flare by Jess Reed and Molly Rees. It therefore fell to Kate Oastler to gather up the stricken men with the bowsprit harpoon, but that unfortunately had been adapted by Jen Jones and Dean One-Trip Elliott to fire a choice of hot custard or clotted cream. Chris Nevin and Jimmy Jones went to alert the Coast Guard, but the wrong sort of radio had been acquired by Lauren D and Roger Prunchkin's Four Rabbits. It was unable to send messages and could only receive Prof Jamie Tutor's bootleg version of Magic FM. Sarah Blake took the initiative and shouted from the forecastle for anyone within earshot with a connection to the Coast Guard to declare themselves. An elderly woman at a Pelican Crossing, who looked like, but probably wasn't, but might have been Paul Danger in disguise, claimed to have a niece in the RNLI and was given a message tattooed into Raz Rasmussen to pass on. While that was happening, Kate Telegram and Andy Newton constructed bilge pumps, and Darren Dox and Amy R constructed bilge to pump through them so they didn't seize up. Charles Taylor and Count Fosco had a more basic concern, namely the waterproofing of the hull/floor, and set about treating the underside of the mobile lounge to a thick layer of thatch. That done, Amanda Cutluck and David Button devised a series of tests to examine the lounge's seaworthiness in extremis. These included Laura Bell, Andrew Worley, Kath Myhill and Jabez Brady positioning themselves on the roof of Leeds Corn Exchange and raining down cannon fire, Dan Goodwin, Johnny Chant, Lethal Badger and Holly Davis redirecting the wave machine and hair dryers at Barnsley's Calypso Cove Waterpark, aiming it at the lounge and setting them to tempest, and Toby Feewee, Mark Stone and Alexander Dunford dressing up as a giant squid and trying to shove the mobile lounge into a bollard. The mobile lounge came out on top every time, even when it was turtled by W. Bigler, Crown of Teabags, Helen Duncan and Mark Bowler, and the exposed hull was used by Matt Taylor, Wes Potts and Anna McBride for a raucous school reunion ball. Chris Moses, Johnny Quinn, Oliver Sanders and Tom Beattie were volunteered by Lauren Davidson to be fenders. Chris Morris, not that one, made an anchor out of three microwaves taped together, and Sarah B. Roth and Tommy Light made sails from the trousers of men from Leeds that seemed trustworthy on the surface but who had let themselves down. Then Charlotte Browning in the mobile lounge's crow's nest hollered at the contents of an email email was being conveyed via semaphore from the balcony of Yorkshire's only surviving internet cafe. Catherine Voluntine translated and transcribed, and relayed that the RNLI and Coast Guard said they were unable to attempt a rescue for the overboard loungers, as Leeds was, for the time being, landlocked. Dawn Turner altered the manifest to make it look like the stricken were never on board in the first place. Cat Piccolilli declared the ship officially seaworthy and partially fit for consumption. Danielle Green staged a mutiny and took command. And Arian Lyra swung a bottle of knockoff champagne into the mobile lounge, causing it to dissolve. Thanks all.
All right, so let's finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you.
Yes, please.
This is from Evie. I have listened to your podcast since I was 9 or 10.
Crumbs.
Blimey. I am 12 now.
Wow.
And I thought it was time to make a cover of one of your jingles. I have made the introduction jingle on my cello.
Oh, wow.
I've played the cello since I was 7, brackets, I am grade 6.
Blimey.
Very good.
And I thought that beats me at flute by 2 grades.
But at the age of 12, I mean, that is no mean feat.
Yeah, that's
Evie. I love the cello as well.
And I thought it would work well with your theme tune. I'm actually writing this on the bus home right now with my cello bow next to me. Not my actual cello, weirdly, only my bow. It's a long story. Well, thank you, Evie.
Yeah, thank you, Evie. Yeah, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yes. Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Thank you, bye.